Blog Talk Radio.
Are you tired of being sheep? Well, so is he. Get a friend, get informed, and get involved. It's We're Not Cattle Radio.
Good evening and welcome to We Are Not Cattle Radio. I am your host, Jake Counts, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, navigating you through this crazy world that we live in. It is the fourth day of February, one day pre my 35th day on this planet. That's right, my birthday is tomorrow and I will be 35 years old, and man, have I learned a lot of stuff. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us. Joining us on the podcast this evening in a few minutes will be Josh Wiley. And we are going to discuss a few things tonight. The first thing that we're going to discuss is what it means to be a true libertarian, I guess, and what liberty means. I guess liberty means to me, what liberty means to Josh, and the values that it teaches. And do those values line up with our traditional founding fathers that were taught from school? Do they line up with the Constitution? Do they line up with these things? And we're going to get into some of that and all kinds of fun and exciting stuff happening with China and Russia as the United States demilitarizes. These guys are increasing their budgets. Still would take light years to match the United States budget of defense, especially with the black defense budget, but yeah, who's counting? Those are off record, so it doesn't really matter. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us. Once again, it is the fourth day of February 2014, and I'm your host, Jake Counts, and Josh Wiley will be joining us here in a moment. First, I want to share a story, and it's very interesting when things that you talk about for quite some time, and you I guess, proselytize to all your friends about, when they start actually becoming more and more evident to members of your family, to your friends, to your neighbors, and then they look at you and they just say, what the hell? And I'm going to actually introduce another acronym for the show later on this evening. It was one Josh and I talked about last night. But what we're basically looking at here is sorry, I just got a phone call in the middle of the show, but whatever. Welcome to live radio. Oh, thank you for joining us, Josh Wiley. Anyway, what I was getting at was, and for those of you that don't know, I'm actually recording video now, so this podcast will be aired in the video portion of the We Are Not Cattle YouTube channel, so check it out if you want to see my face with my great little libertarian beard, and if you want to see Josh in his cardigan and skinny tie, then by all means, check us out. It will be up probably sometime tomorrow, so anyway, getting back to the story, I've bounced around a lot, and I even took my DMAE before the show. It's really unexplainable. But so the other night, my wife is sitting in bed, and we were talking about, because we've got a new child, and anybody that's a parent, especially a new parent, and it's our first kid, so it's like crash course in parenthood, and there's crap everywhere, and you don't have time to clean, and you do have time to clean, but it's intermittent cleaning, and then once you clean it, it just basically gets destroyed again. So my wife was talking the other night, and she said, man, I would really, really like to just invest in somebody to come over and clean my house and clean it really well, and then at least I can feel like we got some kind of baseline here done, and we don't have to worry about, you know, getting all this stuff straightened up. So the very next morning, my wife wakes up and checks Facebook because the little one wants to eat about 5:30 in the morning. She's checking Facebook, and then there's she wasn't checking Facebook. She was listening to Pandora, and there was a pop-up ad for a cleaning service. And she wakes me up and she says, hey, look, I've never searched for a cleaning service online. And I said, no, you don't have to. They listen to you. It's fine. And she goes, but I don't like the fact that they listen to me. So I think it's really starting to drive the nail home is things that I've been saying for years, things that most people have been saying for years that are willing to admit that the establishment that has set up this, you know, panopticon of control has... Meanwhile, Josh holds up his cell phone with the battery taken out of it. This Panopticon full of control, the things that we've been touting for years, the things that William Binney has talked about, the things that Thomas Drake and other whistleblowers have talked about from the NSA before Snowden, and we were trying to disseminate this to the unwilling masses. Now I think it's really starting to register. Whether you think Snowden's an agent, whether you think Snowden's a hero, whatever you think he is, at least you got us thinking, at least you got us asking questions. So what I find, though, is that people are becoming increasingly uncomfortable with the authority and the power of the state, which to this voluntarist himself is a absolutely fabulous thing because it gives us the soapbox and the leverage to basically explain to people what our ideal society would be. Now, is that an ideal society that we can get to tomorrow? Absolutely not. There's a lot of things that has to change between now and then. But I think the first thing that we can start with is giving people a little bit of liberty. And once we understand what liberty is, it's kind of like when I interviewed Adam Kokesh a week or so ago, when he and I both said that once you get liberty, you can't go back. You can't go back to being a statist once you understand the general concept of liberty. So once again, thank you, Josh Wiley, for joining us. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on, man. Thanks for making the time.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And, you know, we talked a little bit about what happened to your wife the other night. And I think it's really time for people to start kind of evaluating exactly what they need to do to, if not make themselves completely anonymous online, because that's, quite frankly, a pipe dream, but at least to kind of start to mitigate some of these effects. So,
okay, so
things
let's
like
get into, you know, let's get into solutions, the solution that you told me the other day for my cell phone. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great ones. I think the prime example is just when you're not using your cell phone. I know texting is great. I know you like to look at Instagram on your iPhone out there, whoever you are. But, I mean, if you've got an iPhone, you can't do this. But make sure to get a battery or a cell phone that has a removable battery and take the damn battery out when you're not using it. Like, this is just common sense stuff. For making calls and texts, Text Secure is an excellent encrypted text app. Obviously, the NSA has ways around this, like keystroking and keylogging and all sorts of other fun kind of things. But at least it makes it a little bit more difficult for them. So if they're going to spy on you, at least make it tough. Red Phone is another great example. I mean, it's an encrypted VoIP cell phone app. So if you have Red Phone installed on your Android phone and you call another Red Phone that also or another cell phone that also has Red Phone installed, then it's essentially an encrypted VoIP call. So it tunnels your voice through an encryption mechanism that makes it a little bit more difficult for law enforcement and the powers that be to not only market to you but to spy on you. So, you know, these are just little steps that everybody can take, and it takes 30 seconds, so
and
do
also
it, people.
Using a VPN for your web browsing. If you're not really going to stream video or anything like that, use a VPN. There's plenty of VPNs out there. Some of them are going to be expensive, but some of them are relatively inexpensive. You can get some that you'll get to sample for free, like Tunnel Bear is one that I've sampled for free. And so you have these options available to you. Now, are we saying to nerd out to the infinite level and go live in a shack somewhere? No, it's absolutely ridiculous, and it's not something that would be pragmatic, or would it be a fun way to live, as far as I'm concerned. But like Josh said, make it a little bit more difficult for them, and eventually they'll start to get the drift that if more and more people start to do this, it's going to take more and more computing power, and it's going to be more and more of a drudge on them, and that's where you're really going to make a difference, is opting out of the system in that way and using peaceful resistance like what Gandhi did. You know, that is how we're going to beat this thing. It's not going to be, you know, go out to the woods, get your guns, your ammo, and your potable water, and wait for the trucks to come in. That's not how you're going to do this.
Well, I mean, I agree and disagree to a certain extent.
Sure.
Like, I don't think that bugging out is a bad idea at all. I don't think having the means of self-defense is a bad idea at all. I'm sure that you can agree with that, right?
Well, no, I'm not saying that those – obviously, you want to be prepared, but understand that that is not the way that you want to drive this beast. This is –
No, yeah, and
you're talking about the death throes of the empire. We don't want the death throes of the empire. We would rather have a revolution of consciousness and a revolution of enlightenment to empower individuals and to let them understand the concepts of liberty and let them understand the concepts and the powers of the individual and what individual transactions and individual decisions and what they do and what they mean and how they affect society.
Well, I mean, what's that George Orwell quote? It's something to the effect of until they become conscious, they will never rebel, and they will never become conscious until after they have rebelled,
It's
this sort of catch-22 where at some point people do have to be prepared for physical resistance, and it might not be against the forces that you're necessarily picturing in your mind. It might be your neighbors that are so entrenched in the status quo that they're not willing to abandon the fact that Walmart is no longer there for them and they can't order trinkets off of Amazon.com and they're going to have to start working a lot harder. But I guess my point is that when we talk about people, you know, bugging out to the woods and all this stuff, you know, there's the meme that is propagated in our culture. I think quite deliberately that these people are isolationists and violent and, you know, are just waiting for the end times. Whereas I would like to present a completely different schema for people who are doing this and trying to live outside the bounds of the state, in that we, for the first time, really have the tools and the technology at our disposal to be completely and utterly off of corporatist and government, the government's heat, mm-hmm. right? So we don't have to get our power from them anymore. Solar power is incredibly inexpensive. You know, there are tools out there to learn how to drill your own well, to grow your own food. So if you're going out to make an alternative, deliberate community, I really can't see that as anything but a smart move in the future. But
I think that you and I are in alignment with this, as well as I guess this is Kokesh's theory that if we move back towards localization, then localization will dissolve the federal government basically as. As we move to localize, and that's, you know, buying from your local grocery instead of going to the big box store or buying from a local hardware store rather than buying from the chain, those types of things. And yes, there's going to be, if you have enough people that buy into that concept, which is the concept that we're trying to promote because it's the guaranteed least violent way to do away with our empire. And I think that that's what we all shoot for here. As like myself, as a voluntarist, I don't like violence. I'm a staunch proponent of the non-aggression principle. But when you get into a situation like we're in, where we have been mounted with debt and we've been put into a corner, especially our society as a whole, even if people don't agree with it or if people don't even understand it. Understand that they're victims of the status quo, and it doesn't mean that they're good people or bad people. It's just that they have lived and gained whatever trinkets that they have under the status quo, and it doesn't mean that they're necessarily bad or evil people. And it just means that you have to, as a free-thinking individual, get them to ask questions, and I think that's the only thing that we can do. Like what Josh and I said, and what Adam even said on the show, is that nobody will ever question where money comes from. Like, that's one of the first questions a child will probably ask its kid. Like, Mommy, where does money come from? I don't know. Go ask your dad. Dad, where does money come from? It comes from the Federal Reserve. Just, you know, go back to doing whatever you're doing. And that's about the extent of it. But once we get into the grand scheme of things, we realize that, holy cow, this is a really big octopus. And then it gets overwhelming at times. And then most people tend to have a minor... I don't want to call it a freak-out mode, but you do have about a month or so, if you start learning more and more about the system, that you have this propensity to go out and try to proselytize to everybody and beat people over the head with the information and the knowledge, and that's not the right approach. And
yeah.
The right approach that we have found is to lead people to liberty, to lead people to individualism, to lead people to these concepts, and then let them discover the concept for themselves and learn on their own, and that's why we always have the Trivium method and things like that to help these people to learn and to help them get off of their mental gridlock. So Josh, let's get into do you want to comment on that really quick, and then we can get to the actual the philosophical meanings of liberty?
Yeah, really quickly, you know, despite some of my ideological quibbles with Adam Kokesh over things like Bitcoin, you know, ultimately we believe in the exact same monetary system, and that's a voluntary monetary system. If Party A has goods and Party B wants your currency, whether that currency is or money, I shouldn't use the term currency, but whether that money is gold, silver, Bitcoin, tally sticks, who gives a damn so long as it's a voluntary transaction? Yeah. But when we talk about localism, I think that we really need to be specific about this, because I don't think you're saying this either. I'm not saying that the global economy is not a wonderful thing, right? Globalism is obviously – the paradigm that we have set up right now is terrible because it depends solely on death and destruction. But the global economy is a great thing. You know, there's not a whole lot of lithium here in Michigan, right? So it might be hard for me to buy a laptop that's from locally sourced and locally produced parts. It might be virtually impossible.
Completely reverse that, then you guys would probably be one of the richest states in the world because you've got one of the biggest freshwater lakes on the planet. So there you go.
And so well, technically, if you count Lake Huron and Lake Michigan as one giant lake, as they should be, then it's the largest freshwater body on the face of the planet. It's also one of the most polluted freshwater bodies on the face of the planet, but that's an episode for another day. My point is...
Your beer makes a filter for that. You're fine.
well, I mean, more people should have one, that's for sure. But
absolutely. Go ahead.
But when we talk about localism, and you brought up that term, and it's so apt, trinkets. The global economy is wonderful for trinkets, but for the things that sustain human life, food, water, soap, hygiene products, basic metallurgy, all of these things. And, you know, with the advent of 3D printing, who the hell knows where this is going to go? You know, it could extend well into medical applications as well. So all of these things can be locally sourced. All of the necessities for human life can be locally sourced. And those are the things that we need to start thinking of. Those are things that everyone can do right now, you know? Yeah, and you can start to get to know the people that are in your local supply chain. So when the global supply chain experiences massive disruptions, which I believe is an utter inevitability in some way, shape, or form, you know, you'll have the connections to feed your friends and your family and to start to build a community that has substance to it, as opposed to the vapid, empty culture that we live in today.
Well, I think that you hit on something that I wanted to touch on, and that is the collective approach that we've been taught from our schooling in high school and elementary school and even middle school, the belief that we're all in this together, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but the way that it's sold to you that everybody has to do something and everybody gets a fair share and everybody gets a fair take, that's typically not the way that life works out. And for the most of the people that have lived past 18, 19 years old, they're starting to understand, especially these children that have been raised in the newer version of society, which is that you don't have any winners and losers. You don't you're somehow an outlier, which is absolutely amazing. But the people that have grown up on there's no winners and losers, everybody gets a trophy, all of these things, that really doesn't shape the mold that creates true economic freedom and true mental freedom either, because you are so used to being rewarded for mediocrity, and you're also used to being rewarded for just showing up. And just showing up is part of it, but you have to show up, work hard, execute, and then maybe you'll be successful. Doesn't guarantee success, but that's the only way that you can actually have something to be successful from, is if you show up, work hard, and then you obviously have to execute your plan, have a plan and execute it. So, and that's just coming from somebody that's been successful in sales. It's you when you show up and you work hard and things don't go your way, you can't get discouraged. You have to keep on keeping on and just trust that what you're doing is going to pay off in the long run. But I think that what we've done in society now is created obviously, you know, I've read quotes from that book, The Welfare State, and we've created a welfare state on purpose, once again, not to bring back the conspiratorial portion of it, but it has been created on purpose to create a voting bloc in order to create a society which they want. And it's easy to get people to fall in line if you're giving them things and they're not working for stuff. And so now we have created this entire welfare state. Now, am I one of those people that believes that we should completely annex it? No, we have to have a way to slowly transition. None of these things are simple solutions. Anybody that comes in and says that we need to dissolve every portion of the government and to just let, you know, just let everybody kind of figure it out hasn't been really thinking about this in a practical, tactical sense. You have to have some semblance of a baseline, and the way that we're going to get there is through a concept which we call liberty. Now, Josh, briefly, let's talk about liberty, which, you know, you and I have that's actually how we met. We met at Liberty Fest. How dare we?
And that we did.
Atlanta Music Liberty Fest. And let's talk about...
Only very briefly, though.
Yeah, well, you're kind of a standoffish person, but we'll get past that.
I'm sorry.
Right. It's okay. All right, so the individualism of what liberty brings to the table. What I just espoused to everybody was the collective model of that we can do all this stuff together, which is a form of socialism slash communism. Not that either one of those, I guess, systems are bad. They've just always been proven to be corrupted, and even more so than capitalism. So anybody that sits here and tells you that capitalism is corrupt, Jesus, what do you think is going to happen if you consolidate power to a smaller group of people and then let them run everything? If you just read Thomas Sowell's Basics of Economics, he breaks it down within the first 100 pages why the Russian system failed and why capitalism flourished. Not to say that either system is perfect. Obviously, we want to get to a point of human development where we can have a better system than we have now, but the only way that we're going to get there is through a true free market, and that's getting ahead of myself. So, Josh, let's talk about the individual. In liberty, the individual is sovereign, correct?
I would say that that's the case, most certainly.
Okay. Now, what else does the individual do? Now, from my perspective, the individual takes on any of the choices that the individual makes, they're responsible for. So it gives you individual and responsible ownership for any deed that you do. If you do something that, you know, breaks a quote-unquote law or something like that, you have to take individual responsibility. There is no passing of the buck. There is none of that. Everything is done through the individual, and the individual has the right to they have the right to make their own choices, and they are responsible for their own actions.
Yeah, I mean, I would completely and utterly agree with that. But when we talk about the definition of liberty,
sure,
we can go into things like the non-aggression principle. We can talk about the fact that, you know, my liberty ends where yours begins. You know, like I feel like that's a pretty good way to sum it up. But you know, I think that there's a little bit of ancient knowledge or pseudo ancient knowledge that we can really take to get down to the brass tacks about. And I hate to use that term and liberty in the same sentence, but you know, to get down to what this really means, because I think it's something that a lot of anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, libertarians of different schemas have not really fully considered, because we live in an age where absolutely everything that has come about, I mean, most of it has been done through the gun of the state without using that gun. It has been done through coercion, through financial manipulation. I mean, these are all systems that these people control. But a very long time ago, and I say a very long time ago, but about 100 years ago, these people figured out how to manipulate the human mind itself. This is as old as probably time itself, since man discovered language, you know, with Plato and the idea of the allegory of the cave and the fact that sophists can rule the human mind without ever physically aggressing upon you. So that's not a free society.
Correct.
That's a society of serfdom through ignorance, right? So if we look at the root word of liberty, liber in Latin, it means two things. It means freedom,
right?
And it also means book,
right?
Library, right? So, you know, I say what you will about ancient philosophers, because some of them certainly had some sordid activities. But I don't think that they chose this term to apply to these two important meanings without thinking about it. So I think that they're trying to tell us something. I think that they're trying to tell us that, you know, that old, what is it, like that 80s Saturday morning cartoon meme, knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Knowledge isn't power. Knowledge is freedom.
Right.
Knowledge is freedom from people who are trying to dupe you. Knowledge is freedom from people who are trying to aggress upon you, to know the intentions of sordid characters. That is the true root of freedom, and that, I think, is something that, you know, not even people within this kind of more esoteric movement realized just yet.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting that my next thing was individual rights. So it would be the natural right for life, liberty, and property. And there's nothing more important than your mind. Your mind is your property, and that is yours. And so you have to find ways to, once again, it goes back to self-ownership. You're responsible for your own actions. So if you choose to be a slave, then that is your choice. But if you choose not to be a slave, and you believe that your mind is your property, then you should take it upon yourself to learn. And I think that that's what we were both trying to get at, is that individual liberty starts at knowledge and it continues, and you only become more, enlightened as you start to understand the larger concepts of liberty. It's, you know, explaining liberty to somebody that has never read Mises or that has never read Hayek or has never read any Austrian economist doesn't understand that the values and the trading that we are talking about are completely different than the fiat money system. And the way that economics is perceived as human interaction rather than numbers and digits, so you're basically comparing an apple to an orange. Would you agree with that, Josh?
Oh, that's most certainly an apt comparison. I mean, they're very, very different things. And until humanity can make that distinction for itself, again, through knowledge, through education, that unfortunately has been stripped out of us for far longer, I think, than just the Prussian system of education.
Sure.
that came to power in the 1830s.
Mm-hmm.
This is as old as time itself. And it's time for humanity to try and break this cycle, because for centuries we've had a group of people, financial oligarchs, religious oligarchs, oligarchs of different, you know, shapes and forms, who have discerned that there is a swing of the pendulum of history. And they've tried their best to stop it at a certain point that affords them the most power. And for the first time in human history, the knowledge, again, that this pendulum exists and that history has, for the most part, been cyclical, is available to the common man.
Mm-hmm.
So we can play this game, too. There's far more of us than there are of them. So our ability to kind of stop this horrible cycle is, again, completely in our power. You know, we... As humanity, this is something that Mark Passio has talked about with his seminars on natural law, which are excellent for understanding human liberty.
And I will actually put those in the show links for this show, everybody, because I was actually talking to one of my listeners tonight about that. We were chatting over Facebook, and he mentioned Mark Passio, and I said, you know, you have to watch his natural law clips, and then we got into some other esoteric stuff. But it really does behoove you guys to understand that there is a way to live on this planet with respect to one another that doesn't involve aggression, that doesn't involve force, and that doesn't involve coercion. And doesn't that sound like a more peaceful place to live in? And I know that any Tea Partier that's probably listening to this and are probably going to piss the Tea Party off, but you know what? You guys are almost there. Actually, you're like one-tenth of the way there. But you're actually going to have to agree to not parking lot the Muslims. I know that that's going to freak you out, but you're going to have to agree that you can't aggress on the Muslims until they aggress on you, which, when's the last time a Muslim attack has ever happened here in the United States that wasn't provocateur or portion of blowback or set up? So
yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, if we really break it down, we've got liberals in this country want slavery by mommy government, mm-hmm. conservatives want slavery by daddy government, and libertarians want a little bit less slavery. You know, they want to be whipped 3 days out of the week instead of seven. These are all equally amoral kind of justifications and rationalizations for slavery.
Sure.
Let's be honest and call government what it is. It is a form of slavery. You know, people like Tom Woods and a lot of other Austrian economists have called it the monopolization of force. Stefan Molyneux has used that term, which I think is completely apt. It is the monopolization of force.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that at its essence is slavery.
Sure.
These people take the most valuable thing that any human being has as a resource, which is not your gold, it's not your silver, it's not your money, it's your time.
Mm-hmm.
Your time is the only finite, valuable resource, most finite and most valuable resource that every human being has. And they take it and use it to extract as much possible material gain as they can from you. And that's... It's very sad. And we talked about this a little bit last night. I'm sorry if I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent.
No, go ahead, man.
This DMA, you've spurred all these thoughts in me. We talked about this.
There I try to enlighten people. Oh, yeah, by the way, I did plug ProPure, everyone. I have been using their Pro 1 fluoride and chloride-free filter. I will forewarn you, the water pitcher is awesome. It takes forever because it's a gravity-fed filter. So fill it up before you go to sleep, and then make sure you have another container that you pour your water in, and get a head start on that thing because it will take a long time. But
you got to get that big Berkey with a pump.
Oh, that's probably a better idea. But you know, yeah. we were going for economy this time. But I highly recommend it, everybody. Once again, I don't have sponsors or anything like that. This show is free to the public. My information and my diarrhea of the mouth is free to the public. So go ahead, Josh.
Oh, no, but this is something that we had touched on last night when we were talking about the topic of liberty. And we were talking about the founding of the country and Patrick Henry, and we can get into this stuff. I think that, you know, that's part of...
I got the book ready, so go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's part of your intention with talking about this subject. But Thomas Paine, you know, forgetting some of his ideological inconsistencies, much like Thomas Jefferson, his belief in the state while championing freedom is somewhat hypocritical. But I think he gets a lot closer than the vast majority of founding fathers, certainly of the Federalists. In his work, you know, The Rights of Man, when he outlines his theory on human nature, which is a bit different than the Lockean theory of human nature, you know, Thomas Paine essentially says that human beings are property-acquiring animals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, simply because so much of our life, so much of our sustenance has to come from property that we gather ourselves. You know, we're naked beings. We have to clothe ourselves to survive. We don't produce nearly as many vitamins, enzymes, and minerals that other plants and animals do, so we have to consume them to survive, you know? It's just a necessity of human existence at this point, you know? Maybe we will evolve out of that or mitigate it at some point in our future, but, you
or
know, that's...
have a brave new world and have it genetically modified into us.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly another possibility.
Tangent, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Maybe the Anunnaki already did engineer it out of us. Ooh.
Whatever, and we're living... mentioned. Yeah, I don't have enough time to get into all that stuff.
I don't want to get into all that stuff at all anyways.
All right, let's get back to liberty. All right, so go ahead.
But when we talk about, you know, human beings as property-acquiring animals, this is something that has been innately played on throughout human history, and especially in modern human history, because while the property that we acquired used to be a necessity of life, you know, you had to own land to be sovereign, to grow your own food, to hunt your own food, to provide for your community, to provide for your family, to educate the next generation, yada, yada, yada.
And that goes
whereas
back
now,
Romans, absolutely. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And whereas now our entire economic system plays on the fact that human beings are property-acquiring animals, but the property that we acquire is entirely useless
mm-hmm.
to human existence. It serves no purpose, you know? Like, as much as we like our cell phones, we can't eat them. You know, there's a certain amount of knowledge that's afforded to us by them, but they don't have utility for human survival. So we need to really start to reevaluate what exactly are the things that human beings need to survive, because those things are what ultimately breed liberty. Mm-hmm. Because if you can produce them yourself, if you can consume them yourself, if you can supply the excess of that to your community at a voluntary exchange rate, then that is the definition of a free community. That is a community that needs no external inputs, and if it does desire those external inputs, it will have the wealth and morality to go out and seek them on equal ground and equal footing. And, you know, that's the future that I fight for, and I think that that's the future that you fight for as well, Jake.
Absolutely, and because once you understand that voluntary exchange and not force and coercion is the best way to go and the best – once again, I think that that's what – before all the manipulation happens, I think that that's what human beings are, because if you look at a child, watch a child that plays with another child. When they borrow toys or when they, you know, hand you a toy or something like that – they don't look for money back. They don't look for any kind of repercussion. They're just looking to share. And I think it's in our nature, except for, once again, psychopaths, sociopaths, and, you know, sophists, that it's in our nature to share with one another and to build a better society. We are builders by nature. That's what we are here to do. I believe that, you know, if you look at the essence of what a human being does, we typically like to try to build things, whether it's a person that's an individual trying to build wealth, whether it's a carpenter trying to build a house, or whether it's a painter trying to build a painting or put an image onto a piece of paper. That's what we are, conceptually, is trying to build something. And so we've been misdirected by social engineering to use all those things to build things for them in order for us to become serfs. And I'm gonna post this in the article for the show notes as well. I'm gonna make a note for it. And that's the Huxley speech that he gives at Berkeley, where he talks about in the future that people will end up loving their servitude because they will have everything that they need or what they believe that they need. Once again, extracting all of your free will, all of your individuality, all your sovereignty, all your life, liberty, and property, but you'll get all the trinkets that you want, and you'll get medical care, and you'll get all of these things, and everything will be provided. And I think it boils down to a simple concept that people would like life to be really easy. And life, everybody, is not easy. Life is difficult. Life is a challenge. Life is a journey. And once you embrace the fact that life is a journey, it's going to make a lot more sense to you. So that said, when we talk about the brainwashing, you want to make a comment. After your comment, I want you to talk about the experience with the school teacher, and then we can dive into what our founding fathers were really all about. Because you will not learn this in history class, which I think is a travesty. Because we should hear both sides of the argument. But then again, I don't write the books. Damn Rockefeller, whatever.
Yeah, you can say that again. Well, you know, just briefly on the topic of sex as it relates to human liberty, you know, the physical act of copulation itself, not the gender species, mm-hmm. whether it's Orwell's 1984, where the act of physical, you know, romance is suppressed, or Huxley's, where it's essentially, you know, a handshake and it holds no meaning any longer. This is clearly, well, again, whether it's enforced through an iron fist or through genetic manipulation and a steady degradation of culture, you know, it's so important to these people. So if we go back to that meme again that I'm trying to propagate, that knowledge is freedom because it means the same thing. You know, knowledge only came in the form of books or lecturers in the ancient world. So when we say Liber means book, we can extend Liber could mean, you know, certain websites or certain podcasts or certain radio broadcasts like this one. It's delivering you knowledge. It's mm-hmm. delivering you freedom. So if we talk about this, obviously we live in far more of a Huxleyan future in terms of the way that the Western cultures interact with one another, where sex has become essentially a handshake and there's very little emotional connection in it. And I think that's endemic of a much larger problem. You know, if men and women don't treat each other with any modicum of respect, then men and men don't, women and women don't, nobody does. If there's no love in the society, then there's no love in human hearts, and there's no love in a free society, because love is the cornerstone of a free society. Mm-hmm. And whether we explain it to people through the left brain or the right brain, you know, we can tell the quote unquote logical person that freedom is the most logical and safe society that they could potentially live in, or we could say that it's the most moral to, you know, the touchy feely types. But once you make that ideological leap, that freedom is the most moral and the most efficient path, then you've got that reunification of your left and right brain, and all of that, you know, the trauma that the human race has garnered over centuries just starts to dissolve. And, you know, we really need to get back to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And that's why I try to, once again, I try to be positive everywhere that I go. And when I do my sales calls, I smile at everybody. Even if people are having a bad day, you never know what that person's going through. So once again, my New Year's resolution, and I've done really well at it, has been not to judge people. And that means that when I sit and watch television, I don't judge, you know, the people that are selling out on TV. I don't judge, you know, the people that I see on the street. I don't judge people by what they're wearing. Because I used to be a type of person that would make mental tics or mental quips about people that I would see in public. But then again, now if I look at them conceptually, I don't look at them as, oh, look at that piece of trash, or oh, look at that person right there because of what they're wearing, or how they're, you know, what kind of car they're driving, or anything like that. it's kind of deprogramming yourself from the materialistic side that's been programmed into you through culture and Madison Avenue and what Josh was talking about, the moral degrade of society. If you rise above that and look at everybody as an individual and look at them as a person that's just been misled, and this is what Josh and I got into philosophically a long time ago, that I think that anybody can be taught liberty. I think that anybody can be taught major concepts, and they can understand them because it is innate in our nature to be free. Much like what Tom Campbell said, and what the heck is the gentleman's name? I'm just spacing on him. Josh, the gentleman that Eric Dollard said that energy wants to be free, and that's the nature of energy, is to free itself. Well, if we're created of matter and energy, then what should our nature be? Our nature should be to free ourselves. And once again, it starts with the mental acumen and the mental freeing of yourself from the society where you believe that you have to have people in black uniforms to protect you, that you have to have surveillance blimps to protect you from the good bad guys. I mean,
yeah.
And it's trended into you, and you don't realize it, but once you start thinking about your childhood, think about watching, you know, just a simple cartoon like G.I. Joe. What did G.I. Joe do? G.I. Joe fought Cobra. What did Cobra wear? Cobra always wore black uniforms and masks. Now, if you look at your cops, what do the cops look like now that are raiding people's houses with black uniforms and ski masks? That should tell you something. If your conceptual knowledge of a bad guy is a person coming in, and not saying cops are bad, believe me, they're not. The majority of them are probably decent people. It's probably like the 5% rule. You have the 5% that are just absolute jackasses that ruin it for everybody, like the people on Wall Street. But, you know,
except for New York City, Chicago, and L.A., I take exception to those police.
Okay, well, we can eliminate those people. But, you know, from a conceptual standpoint, just look at what you're putting up with in society and what people are telling you that normal is. If you were to show somebody this police raid that just happened that Josh and I are going to touch on towards the end of the show, where this family got raided by a SWAT team, there was no knocking. It was a similar concept to what happened with Adam Kokesh, where there was two knocks, the door gets busted in, and a flashbang goes off. There was no flashbang this time, but it was the same kind of thing. They stacked right. They went in, everybody muzzle sweep, make sure a house. That's not a free society. So anyway, off of my diatribe of the police state, Josh, share with the audience the story that you shared with me last night about the founders when a substitute teacher tried to tackle not physically but metaphorically speaking a class full of third graders, was it?
Yes.
Okay. So
And for some reason, this event has always kind of stuck out in my mind throughout my life, and I think that it's really pertinent given that we're talking about the nature of books as freedom. And I was in the third grade at the time, and we had a substitute teacher, and we were learning about the Civil War. And this substitute teacher tried to inform us that there was far more of a motive for the North to attack the South than the freeing of the slaves, which, you know, now I can look back on that historical meme and laugh in its face, because that's obviously not at all what happened during the Civil War. You know, you only have to read the Emancipation Proclamation to know that the Civil War was not about freeing any sort of slaves. But we, as a class, when she tried to present this knowledge to us, vehemently, you know, in a fervor, started screaming and attacking her. No, we learned this just last week. Abraham Lincoln went to free the slaves. He did it. He did. It's right here in the book. It's by McGraw-Hill, funded by the Rockefellers. We know it. We learned it. And she eventually just gave up and went on to the next subject. But it's just so telling of a conditioned society, of a society whose knowledge is controlled and thus whose ability to free itself is controlled. And it takes place at such a young age. Right. It starts obviously before that. When, for example, Barack Obama comes out in his State of the Union address and says that we've taken such a large push with Common Core education that I'm going to, if the Congress does not, sign an executive order that works with foundations to provide free pre-kindergarten for all kids, that essentially means that we want to start the brainwashing just a little bit earlier, you know, if you translate this gobbledygook into English. So when we see this going on in a culture that's so pervasive In terms of the propagandization of very young children, which is probably the worst form of child abuse that, that I can see, it's done by ignorant parents who were abused the same way going through this school system. And that's what organized schooling is. It's child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hurt people hurt people. So, you know, when your mom and your dad go off to work and they drop you off at school to be raised by the state, and then they don't pick you up till six and you go to Montessori afterwards and you've got another state employee watching over you and molding your mind and your body at a very young age, this is the cycle of abuse that we have to break. And again, it's very sad to admit, but we will not see a free society in these terms in our lifetime. It simply can't happen. There's too many people who are still broken inside because of this vicious cycle of abuse.
Right.
And once humanity decides to break that chain, that's when we can start talking about being free. I just hope that people like you and me can start to lay the foundation for this while we're still breathing.
Well, and I think that it's very telling that you had people like Ron Paul that started the homeschooling movement and got really behind that. And, you know, philosophically speaking, I have some differences with him. And he was the guy that kind of pointed me towards liberty, but now, you know, in further study, I'm starting to realize that, I mean, he is a self-proclaimed voluntarist, so I would, you know, align with him on that. But I do have, I guess, a different concept of how we would get there, but once again, arguing semantics at that point. So I think that, you know, understanding what happens at that young of an age and how malleable children are, like Josh says, once that concept has been repeated to, it's almost like Fox News viewers, you know, if you repeat a concept long enough, the Fox News viewer is going to buy into it. So, and they're not going to question it. So
it, Benghazi.
Yeah. It just becomes a meme that is used to distract and deflect. And it's really, really sad. But anyway, so no more mainstream media talk, because that's really crushing the conversation about what we're talking about here. But let's talk about the original founding fathers and the ideology that we have, first of all. And as I'm reading this book, and I'm almost done with it, as I'm reading this book on Patrick Henry, I'm starting to realize that I align more with the anti-federalists than I ever did with the regular federalists. But as Josh and I spoke about last night, the Federalists are deemed in our books as the champions, as the heroes, as the people that are going to save the Union and save the country. And that's what they were about. They were about federalization. And so when you look at the actual pulse of society back then, somewhere between, I think the numbers were as low as 7 out of 10 and as high as 9 out of 10, were anti-federalists. Because what they saw was an aristocratic takeover of the ruling establishment. Basically the same thing that they fought against from getting away from England. They were basically going to create a similar doctrine there with the Constitution. And I have a clip from the actual book here. From, it's called Lion of Liberty by Patrick, or about Patrick Henry and A Call to a New Nation. And this is out of this is on chapter 14, and I don't know how far it is because this book's on Audible. But I highly recommend it if you want a different perspective, and if you want to understand what true liberty means. And I will actually post another link. I'm going to make that note as well to the "Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death" speech, because that will really, if you think that you understand what, like Josh said, if you think you understand freedom, you need to read that. And then I think you'll really get it. So here is the clip, and Josh, give me a thumbs up or not if you can hear this well enough in the actual speaker. Stand by. Technical difficulties here. All right. Okay, here we go. Sorry, I had a little technical glitch. So welcome to live radio. Here we go.
One spectator in the gallery was so stirred by Henry's vivid description of federal enslavement that he involuntarily felt his wrists to assure himself that the fetters were not already pressing his flesh. The Constitution is said to have beautiful features. Henry turned to Federalist Chairman Wythe. But when I come to examine these features, sir, They appear to me horribly frightful. Among other deformities, it has an awful squinting. It squints towards monarchy. And does not this raise indignation in the breast of every American? Your president may easily become king. Where are your checks in this government? There will be no checks, no real balances in this government. It is on a supposition that your American governors shall be honest, that all the good qualities of this government are founded. But its defective and imperfect construction puts it in their power to perpetrate the worst of mischiefs, should they be bad men. Henry stopped suddenly.
So there you go. And now, what kind of society do we live in now? We live in a society that has been set up, once again, with little checks and balances, even though people will argue that the Congress and the executive branch and the judicial branch all have checks and balances on one another. But as he said, there was nothing really written in stone, so you don't have a real system of checks and balances. So go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, and I touched on this earlier. You know, monarchy is slavery by one. A representative republic is slavery by the few. State capitalism is the same way, slavery by the few. Communism is slavery through the proletariat. So when people say that, you know, we had this constitutional system that people like Thomas Jefferson fought for, and we could have never imagined that these checks and balances would break down in such a way that would allow a president to essentially become king through a pen in the form of an executive order.
1789 on the floor, never mind.
Yeah. These people knew what was happening back then, so you really have to ask yourself, was the Constitution a system set up by free men for free men, or was it set up by aristocrats who had very specific language and were sophists themselves and talked a big game about freedom, but quite deliberately set up a system that could make men their serfs at any time?
Mm-hmm. And it was, and it goes back to earlier in the book, he touched on this as well, where Benjamin Franklin rushed everybody into the halls of the into Philadelphia, so if they were the first to ratify the Constitution, that they would have a better chance of getting the Capitol. So, I mean, do I believe that the Constitution had a nefarious standpoint? It doesn't bode well for the average citizen to look at the way that the thing was set up, look at the way that it was pushed, and then look at the way that it was ratified. When you had people like Patrick Henry that were very, very well respected, very well respected. If you listen or read this book, you'll understand how well he was respected by Washington and all of these other, you know, quote-unquote leaders. And when somebody like that sees the Constitution and decides not to even go because there's so many holes in it, and he is the arbiter of liberty from, From my eyes, he is one of the arbiters of liberty that has ever existed and understood freedom and understood slavery, just like he said there. And he understood that if you give the collective power to individuals, whether they don't have check, they have to have extreme checks and balances. And one of the things that he proposed was having the taxation powers of the federal government go through the state, and it has to get ratified by the states in order for them to do anything. But that never happened either, and he said that what's going to happen is that you'll have a federal government that will end up taxing people into slavery, and that's where we are currently. But people don't see it because there's soft taxes and hidden taxes. And by the way, Josh, did you get your billion back from H&R Block from the private
sir? Absolutely, I did. I'm swimming in my cash right now. Just open my closet door and it just rains down upon me. But, you know, it's an excellent kind of historical metaphor. And it all happened within this same kind of time period. Thomas Jefferson kind of rips most of the Constitution from the part of the Iroquois Federation that split mm-hmm. off and fought with the colonists.
Mm-hmm.
He takes that system of governance, changes some of the parts that allow for a more free society, and then in turn goes back and, not Thomas Jefferson personally, but the state goes back and slaughters the Iroquois Confederation, whose government they stole and changed. So I think this is a perfect kind of parallel between the Constitution itself and the origins of the Constitution. It's a system that was set up quite deliberately to be this way, in my opinion. And people like Patrick Henry were smart enough to see it coming. And some people might make the excuse that, you know, the colonies were so strapped for cash after fighting the revolution that they needed this system. But that's, quite frankly, exactly why the conflict was engineered in the way that it was, to create an indebted nation, to create a nation that would have to say, okay, well, we've got to make a central bank, we've got to print a federal currency, we've got to get our goods and services out into the global marketplace so we can become a competitive force again. But through becoming a competitive force, you automatically, at some point in time in your inevitable future, become tyrants.
Yeah.
You know, this is why...
Go ahead.
This really quickly, this is why even the most ideologically principled of our founders, supposedly ideologically principled, like Thomas Jefferson said, you know, we shouldn't have a standing army, but, you know, a navy, they're just on the water, so that's cool, right? We can do a navy. We can have an imperialistic force, but we just so long as it doesn't threaten our liberties. And, you know, that's just yet another stepping stone on the path to tyranny.
Absolutely. And then, as I was going to mention before, as you were talking about how these guys were looking, most of them actually did capitalize a great deal on setting up this form of government. Washington capitalized a great deal. Most of our founding fathers, yes, I hate to admit it, everybody, for those of you that did not take this in history class, most of them were rich aristocrats that were going to gain quite heavily from drafting something like this and involving a federal government. George Washington, most of these guys were. So, and then they tried to, and I mentioned this before to you last night, Josh, they tried to give away the Mississippi River to Spain, and that was luckily blocked by a bunch of states, because that would have been another form of slavery. Because they were doing exactly what Josh said. They were strapped for cash. They were trying to find ways to get around this, to find inroads. Most of these colonies, like Rhode Island, that was the first one to sign, wanted the protection of the big bad federal government. So there were a lot of moving parts at play. Now, am I a historian by any stretch of the imagination? No, and I wasn't there, so that gives me two strikes against me. But understanding the concepts here that we're talking about, it really has to go through your mind of what do you really want your government to be? What do you want your life to be? And I think that that's the overall scheme of what we're getting at. So transitioning off of the historical and the philosophical, Josh, you got any closing comments? Because I do want to play this clip for everybody, and then you and I can comment on the actual antithesis of and freedom.
Absolutely. Really quickly, just to kind of bring this historical continuity into the 1800s a little bit, the intent of our founders, especially of Thomas Jefferson, is laid bare during the Louisiana Purchase. It's the doubling of the size of the country overnight. He has the unique opportunity to essentially say, we're making this purchase, and we are going to ban slavery from these new lands. It can be done with the flick of a pen, and Thomas Jefferson chooses not to do this because of the financial incentive. And this is the crux of this myth that has been set up around our founding fathers, specifically of even supposedly staunch anti-federalists like Jefferson. These people, at the end of the day, are about the capital that can be derived from free and autonomous human beings.
I would agree, and that's it's just a lot to take in. Sorry, everybody, but this has been A Crash Course in Liberty by Jake Counts and Josh Wiley. So now moving on to the anti-liberty, and hopefully, because I'm starting to see more and more people, I guess when I post things like this on Facebook and when I'm going to only stick to posts. I can't do the religious posts anymore because those typically start a lot of banter that I don't like to get into if I can't have a face-to-face conversation with people, because people get emotional and they type things. And so I would rather just leave those tabled. But I will be posting and tweeting out more things like this, the militarization of police, as well as food freedom and just all overall mental health freedom. Because I think that, as we touched on earlier, your mental health and your mental sanity and your mental clarity and your ability to comprehend large concepts are what's going to get us out of this, and your ability to communicate with your fellow human beings is also going to be very, very crucial in these times. because we are facing a very interesting next couple of years. And I didn't even get into the China and Russia, you know, beefing up their stuff, and we're demilitarizing, but whatever. So I do want to point out at the very end of this this article or this this clip something, but I'm going to let the clip play, and then Josh and I are going to comment, but I do want to point something out to him at the very end, and I think he'll catch it. I'll start pointing down at my screen, Josh, when the magic time arrives. So here's the clip, and the article is from the Washington Post, one of Josh and I's favorite writers. It's called Scenes from a Militarized America, an Iowa Family Terrorized. So here's the clip.
Families say they were terrorized when Ankeny police burst into their home without knocking, and they say somebody could have been hurt or worse, killed because of it. Aaron Brillbeck has the story. It's new at 10.
I've been so traumatized, I don't sleep at night.
Sally Prince is afraid to stay in her Des Moines home. She isn't afraid of burglars breaking in. She's afraid of the police. On Thursday, Ankeny police executed a search warrant at her home looking for someone they suspected of using stolen credit cards to buy clothes and electronics. The whole search was caught on surveillance video. Ankeny police tell us they knocked first, but the video tells a different story. It shows one officer pounding on the side of the house. Seconds later, officers use a battering ram to force their way in. Prince's son, Justin Ross, was in the bathroom at the time, and he was armed with a gun that he's legally allowed to carry when an officer kicked the door.
I stood up, I drew my weapon, I started to get myself together to come out the door. I heard somebody out in the main room say police, and I reholstered my weapon, I sat back down, and I put my hands in my lap.
If the officer had gotten in the bathroom on the first kick, the story probably would have had a different ending.
I would have been standing there with my weapon drawn, pointed at the doorway, and they probably would have shot me.
This was over property purchased with a stolen credit card. It doesn't make any sense that they would go to such extremes for something that simple.
Police apparently did not find any of the items they were looking for in the warrant. They did arrest two people who were staying with the family on unrelated charges. Miranda Scigliano was charged with a probation violation. Richard Adair was charged with possession of drugs with intent to deliver. The family believes the police were also trying to cover up the way they were executing the warrant by covering up and, in one case, even ripping out a security camera. You can see this officer spots the security camera in front of the house and then rips it right out. Another officer spots this video camera downstairs and covers it up. The family says if the police had knocked, they would have opened the door and allowed the officers to search the home. Now they say they're scared the police may come back.
The police are supposed to protect and serve, not make you in fear of them. And I'm totally terrified of them now.
It's called cognitive dissonance.
Police executed the warrant in Des Moines because the alleged theft took place in Ankeny, but the suspects live in Des Moines. Now, Ankeny police say they do not have any written policy governing how they conduct search warrants, and they cannot comment any further on this because it's considered an ongoing investigation.
Police always tell us they have reasons for things they do. Anybody in that house with a violent criminal past that would have made them enter that way?
In a word, no. Two of the people had no criminal history at all. In fact, Justin Ross, the gentleman that we interviewed, was recently honorably discharged from the Army. The third person does have an arrest record, but the most serious charge that we found was for theft, and that charge...
Here comes the winner.
I've got to ask, because I assume a lot of people want to know, why do they have all these cameras in the first place, Aaron?
Good question. The woman who owns the house, both of her sons, we interviewed the one. She's got another son that we didn't interview. They're both audiovisual technicians, so they like to tinker a lot, and they put up a lot of these cameras. They have stereo equipment all over the place, and both of their cars have been broken into in the past, so they hung up these cameras.
We'll look forward.
Why do they have all these cameras? Are you... Never mind the fact that a bunch of armed SWAT guys busted in their door and muzzle sweeped everybody and said, oh, whoops, yep, not here.
So to combat property theft, they come and destroy an innocent person's property.
Yes.
Makes a lot of sense. And of course, you got to throw some felonious charges in there at the very end just so you don't look like fucking idiots. Excuse my language.
Welcome to the state, everyone. Everything's fine, man. Everything's fine. No, that is a prime example of why you do not want militarized police, because if you're going to execute a search warrant, once again, I don't know when this strategy and tactic became relevant. I'd love to talk to a police officer about it. I'd actually like to get an officer on my show and and understand why they serve warrants like this now. I remember when they used to serve warrants back in my day. Now I sound like a big redneck. But nobody would ever come with what looks like a German Nazi helmet on and some... And actually, everybody's wearing... they're wearing camo, so it's not really a police uniform. And...
MPs in fatigues, man.
Yeah, MPs in fatigues. Come on, that's your police. What? That looks like a military group. Nah, that's your cops. Everything.
They're trained by the military group. Whatever.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. So that would be the antithesis, everyone, of liberty. So once again, you either can subscribe to Josh and I's theory of non-coercion, non-violence, non-aggression, and you can get a free loving society, or you can subscribe to fear, intimidation, and coercion, which will bring armed guys with M4s and a battering ram and some shiny little helmets into your house to find somebody that doesn't live there and scare the pants off of some old lady that thinks the cops are there to serve and protect.
And probably shoot your dog if you've got one of those.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
They like killing dogs for some reason. I don't know what it is.
I don't know, man. Like I said...
Dog-on-dog violence is what it is.
It's probably... Once again, it's 5% of these people that probably give them a bad name. But, man, for some reason, it just... You guys keep making these videos. And it doesn't... And I know that the proliferation of cameras isn't that much better than it was 5 years ago. Like, everybody had cameras on their cell phone 5 years ago, and I don't remember seeing all this this macho, like, stomping around and I don't know. It really depresses me sometimes.
It's the delivery method, I think,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
5 years ago, we couldn't, or even 10 years ago, we had cameras on our cell phones, but it was very hard to stream video to the world. And now that the world is watching every time these jackbooted thugs serve a warrant, and, you know, you might have your proclivities about individual police officers. I think that if you put on a badge, then you're a dog of the state. But, you know, that now that these people are being held accountable by an aware citizenry, they don't like that too much.
Mm-mm. And once again, it's... They're individuals, too, and I'm not going to get into the Barack Obama that, you know, these guys and the NSA people are our friends and our neighbors. I'm not going to go on that kind of a soapbox. But I think that how do the cops not think that this is wrong? That's what I want to know. I want to understand the psychology of how do you guys not understand that what you're doing is a little bit over the top? And maybe
don't ask me, man. I just drive the trains.
Yeah. All right.
It's Amtssprache. That's the answer for you. And in German, it's official language. Because if you call it serving a warrant as opposed to kicking down a door and shooting someone's dog on under felonious charges, that sounds a whole lot worse. But you'll go and serve a warrant. You'll go and meet your quota. If meet your quota means oppress the citizenry, then you might think about it a little bit differently. But it's this sophisticated nature of language that is, you know, pervaded our culture that makes these things possible. It's mental trickery, which gets us back. We've come full circle.
Yay! Welcome.
Knowledge is freedom.
There we go. Knowledge is freedom, everybody. That's it for the show, everyone. Be sure to share the podcast with people you know, people you love, people you like. And let's start a dialogue outside of the paradigm. Once again, follow me on Twitter. We are not cattle to number one. Like my Facebook page, or you can friend me on Facebook if you would like. And also, go to the YouTube channel. I'm going to upload this video once it gets rendered, and you will get to see my beautiful face and Josh's beautiful cardigan and his skinny tie. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And once again, get a friend, get informed, and get involved. And we will see you next time. Josh has one more thing to say, I guess. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Really quickly, my outfit over at the Journalistic Revolution, our new website is completely done, propagated with content. So if you guys want to hear more from me or my coworkers, head on over to journalisticrevolution.com. That's where all of our work is going to be going forward.
And I should have plugged you by myself. I'm ashamed now.
Don't sweat it.
All right, everybody. You know the sites. I'll put the link in the show notes. Everybody, look for the show notes to come up sometime tomorrow with all the videos, the Huxley video of the speech in University of California, Berkeley, Patrick Henry speech, the clip from tonight, links to the Journalistic Revolution, And once again, get a friend, get informed, and get involved, and let's start changing some minds out there. And Josh and I are going to be releasing some new duds here pretty soon. Not duds, but we're going to be releasing some new content. So look forward to doing that with him sometime in the near future. But take care, everybody. It's been real. It's been fun. And so share the message. Peace, love, and liberty, everyone.